Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson.
Oh, hello, welcome along to another Tech Talk here on RNIB Connect Radio. It's great to have your company. Stephen Scott and Robin Christofferson here once again. I'm from RNIB, he's from AbilityNet. We are bridging the charities together, Robin.
I've lost my voice this week, I'm afraid, guys. Sorry.
It's not a very good bridge this week, I'm going to be honest with you. Robin's lost his voice. Can I ask how that happened?
I've had a very busy week of talking last week and ended up coughing all over the weekend. Or is that too much information?
That's way too much information. But thank you for sharing. You know, that's what it's all about here on Tech Talk. We do like to share. Just maybe keep the cough to yourself. I do believe you were on the news. I know you wanted to talk about this because you're a superstar now. Not going to be hanging around the likes of us for much longer.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'll stay grounded. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, so you're on Sky News.
Yep.
Why?
It was about the NHS, that story that we're going to hopefully cover a little bit later on. But all things NHS, all the information that you would get from their website is now embedded in the A-Lady.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, we're going to be talking about that. And yeah, you got on the news. Well done. I must admit, when I heard Robin Christofferson on Sky News, I got worried for a few moments. I'm going to be honest with you, Robin, but thankfully it was all good.
Wanted.
Now, also, we are going to be talking about Android this week. We do so much talk about Apple here on the show. It's sometimes hard to remember that there is actually something else out there that you can get that is accessible, and actually, for a lot of reasons, much cheaper as well. We're going to be talking about Android phones, talking to three blind and partially sighted people who are very keen to tell us all about why they like the platform. And how does a visually impaired film director do his job? We're going to be hearing from one today on the show, which is pretty impressive. And we're going to be hearing from one of the many people who attended Sight Village in Birmingham. That is our Sheila Armstrong from the Torch Trust. That's all coming up on the show. I was just waiting for that last little bit there, yeah. Producer Andy is, yeah, absolutely. I like that little doomph at the end. Andy's here as well.
Speaking of little dumps, here's Andy.
I didn't say that.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, Robin. How are you both?
I'm great. I wasn't saying that. I mean, I was thinking it, but I wasn't saying it.
Worked with you too long. I know how your head works.
You know how it's going, yeah.
I've got an Oompa Loompa in my mind now. I don't know why. Oh,
well, listen, we've got so much to get through, and it's got such a busy show this week. I want to get right in, guys, with the emails. Let's get right into it.
Email. We get email. Get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Spoiler alert this week, we're probably not going to get through them all. I'm just saying that because we've got so much to talk about, but we will definitely continue the email conversation next week. Managing expectation, guys. That's what I'm all about here. Right, to Andy and the inbox of amazingness.
Oh, really? We need a jingle for that as well.
Yeah. The inbox of amazingness.
Yes, lovely, lovely.
Yeah, the budget. Someone clip you can tell the budget went on that jingle, can't you? Right, okay.
Starting off with Kelly. Hi, gang. After listening to this week's podcast on the Victor Reader stream, it doesn't surprise me on how popular it is. At one time, I used to use the Victor Reader stream till In Your Pocket came along 2 years ago. I have tried Overdrive and Easy Reader apps on my iPhone, but I found them rather cumbersome. Although the Victor Reader Stream and the Victor Reader Classic were good, I needed to move on and have access to everything in one place. Although I use my iPhone for streaming music and other things a lot, I don't use it for accessing talking books and the RNIB newsagents. There are a lot of features that In Your Pocket doesn't have, but my iPhone does. Like, for example, you can't create appointments and use reminders on it like you can with both Lady A and Siri. The other thing is that since using Lady A, I have done away with CDs. I used to use on both the Amazon Echo and on my iPhone. So you could say I use these three things, which are Lady A, In Your Pocket, and my iPhone. I can have access to my RNIB talking books, my newspapers, podcasts, and so on within seconds. Less cumbersome. Now, Stephen, I want to know why you don't like Daniel as your voiceover on your iPhone.
Oh.
Right. I use Daniel on Jaws, my Apple Watch, and my iPhone. I love Daniel because he's so natural and clear. I wish I had Daniel on In Your Pocket. How can you not like Daniel? I think of him as one of my companions. Well, I hope this helps. Take care. All the best. That's from Kelly in West Sussex.
Kelly, thank you for your email. It is great to hear from you as always. And I hope Sussex is good and enjoying some nice weather.
Why not Daniel?
Why not Daniel? I just don't like Daniel's voice. I don't know what it is. I don't know. He just seems a bit too stern for me. Say again?
A bit formal.
Formal, yes.
Ava's so reassuring.
I like Ava.
Assertive.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of just... It depends. I kind of like Ava because she's got a bit of a deeper voice. There's one I'm running just now. I think it might be the Siri female voice on my iPhone. But it's a bit sibilant, so you get a lot of high-end treble on it. Getting a bit, you know,
that's
audio.
A bit techie.
I know, yeah. I'm getting a bit techie on this one. It is a tech show, believe it or not. I mean, I just... It's horses for courses. I think it depends what you like. I would say I'm probably moving towards a time when I'll probably have different voices on different devices, because I'm finding the same voice on each one can get a bit irritating because it's the same voice everywhere. So I may change around, but Daniel won't be it. Sorry, Kelly. Who's your favourite voice? Is it Ava?
Yeah, Ava everywhere. And you can get Ava for Jaws and obviously for VoiceOver on the Mac and on the iPhone. I wish I could have it on the watch. She's not available on the watch. So it's an American lady, I think, on my watch. But yeah, love Ava. And thanks for the love about the Echo, Kelly. Glad you're really enjoying the A Lady or Lady A dot to dot. That's a good podcast. Don't know if you've heard of that one.
Never heard of it. Never heard of it at all. Is that still going, is it?
We're up to episode 900 in a couple of days, guys.
Now, listen, actually, do you know what? You got my wife all intrigued by your podcast, the Escape Alcatraz one you put out the other day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she loves that one. That's a fantastic skill, actually. Now, just before we move on to the next email, thank you for that, Kelly. I appreciate that. And I want to talk about Victor Reader in a little while, so we'll come back to Victor Reader. But I just wanted to say there's an email we got in last week from Nadia that you wanted to pick up on, Robin.
Yeah, so she was saying that when she listens to audiobooks on her A-Lady, A-L-E-X-A, on the Echo, then it cuts out after a while. And I haven't had that experience myself. And the only thing I can think of is that perhaps somehow a sleep timer function has been applied. Now, you actually have to ask for a sleep timer. So say you want to fall asleep to your favourite audiobook, then you can say set a sleep timer for 15 minutes or 45 minutes, whatever, and it will just stop at that point. So you haven't got that much to go back and to find your place again, you know, because you dropped off. That's the only time I can think that the Echo or the Audible skill on the Echo will stop your book without you doing anything. So you could cancel all sleep timers. You could ask her to do that before you start listening. But that's a long shot because I think it should only really happen when you've intentionally invoked a sleep timer. So, yeah. Don't know.
Okay. Well, it's an interesting one. I know that my dad's Amazon Echo wouldn't play music. It would play 10 seconds worth of song and then stop. But that seemed to change when he subscribed to Prime. So, but I assume, obviously, you know, Nadia, you've got the full, you know, account set up with Audible. It's not an account that you've maybe had before. Although even so, you still own the book, don't you, if you bought it. So, I don't know. It's a strange one. Let us know how you got on with that, Nadia. Interesting thought there from Robin. Let's go to another email then.
So this next one's from John. He says, hello, team.
Hello.
Just some thoughts on my last 4 weeks with my new Pixel 1a. First of all, word processing. Now, he says he uses Google Docs for going ever doing documents. Because of the Google dictation, this makes things so much better to use. Just above the letter P, there is a dictate button. For email, he has put on Aquamail and K9 Mail on his phone, and these apps are very, very easy to use. Because of the ability to swipe down for characters, word lines, I can find a phone number in an email and dial it up, or an email address and click on it to send a message. He also mentions reading magazines. I find that the Zinio app has lots of, has better access now. This will not work on iOS, but I can now read my good old mags on Hi-Fi and Tech Advisor on this app. It's a little bit fiddly, like getting to the apps drawer when you can get your apps cleared. This is a quick two-finger swipe upwards. If you are in a dock, and if you say go to the word setting. You can use the volume up and down to go through the dock. Then you can just edit the dock. Now, to turn on TalkBack, it's volume up and down pushed together. Browsing on the web is so much better, and for podcasts, I use Podcast Addict, as do I, and Pocket Casts. The Google Assistant is very, very good and will get much better very soon. So within 4 weeks of real hard work, I really love the Android setup. The iPlayer is very good to use, and the Voice Dream Reader is also very good for reading. With my PlusNet SIM, only deal I get for this is £6 per month. For SatNav, I use Lazarillo, and for doing the routes, I use Google Maps. Again, for a first-time user, Android is really here for us now. So with my iPhone 8 and the Pixel 3a, I have the best of both worlds. The letdown is a grade 2 Braille is so much better on the iPhone, but I'm so pleased with this purchase and the access to it. That's from John.
Okay, well, thank you for that, John. And yes, I was going to say, it's probably the Pixel 3a, I think you mean there, John. Yeah. That's sounds like a great phone. I mean, it's one of these phones that it is, you know, the price is really good, Robin. It's got fantastic accessibility on it. I'm hoping to do a review on it quite soon for us. I think overall this is a good device.
Absolutely, yeah. It doesn't seem like it's compromising at all, and yet it's half the price of the other Pixels. So really, really good choice there. It sounds like a good combo that he's got going for him there. And he did, yeah, say 3A at the end. He said 1A at the beginning, but, you know, slip of the finger there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, we're going to be talking more about Android in a few moments' time. We're going to be finding out the thoughts of three blind people and their positions on Android phones. All of them came into the studio to talk about something totally different, by the way. And all of them mentioned that they had Android phones. And I thought, oh, we've got to interview these guys, find out what's going on here. Three people I've met in one place with Android phones. What is going on? But we'll find out. Back to the inbox for now, though.
To Sandra, says, hi, Robin and Stephen. I have just successfully paired my Echo speakers by following Robin's instructions. Please, Robin, slow phone speech down before demonstrations to make it easier to follow for those of us who are hearing impaired, such as myself. I was able to enlarge the screen, but those without sight could not do that, so they may miss out. Tech Talk is a great program. I have learnt so much from listening to you both. Keep up the good work. From Sandra in Bristol.
Oh, thank you, Sandra.
Thank you, Sandra. I'm putting my hands up. If you could see, I've got my hands in the air. Guilty as charged. I actually recorded that one prior to that episode a couple of weeks ago when I promised faithfully not to, you know, to slow down speech for future demos. So yeah, that one was already in the can, so apologies there, but yeah, absolutely,
it was a great review and it was a great opportunity to try things. I mean, a lot of people probably didn't even know, Robin, you could even do that. You know, you've got more than one of these devices at home, you can pair them up, create stereo speakers. That's brilliant. And the price points as well. Okay, let's get another email in then.
There's one here from Jules. Says, hello, gentlemen. Following all the interest in audio players over the last couple of programmes, may I say three quick things. Number one, shortly after listening to the most recent podcast, I was browsing around the internet and discovered that King's Access Technology, the people who make the Sonic and Sovereign MP3 players, are about to release a new product called the Solo. This is a very compact memory stick playing a personal audio player. There is an excellent video about it on their website. It has not been released yet, but I guess it may be at the next Sight Village. I expect that many listeners who cannot get there would value the opinion of anyone who does to get the chance to try it. Number two, says Jules, copyrights. I like to copy audiobooks that I've downloaded onto a memory stick so that I can play them on my Sonic player. Sometimes I do the same onto the old phone that I mentioned in a previous email. It's just so much safer and more convenient that way. I've always assumed that as long as I'm doing it purely for my own consumption and delete the file after finishing, I cannot be doing anyone any harm. But what is the law about this, he says. It seems to me that many devices, including the Solo mentioned above, rely upon being able to move files. And third and finally, Jules says, Overdrive versus Dolphin Easy Reader. I have used both, and, well, perhaps I was dropped on my head as a baby, but I do not find one any easier than the other. I use the Android Overdrive app rather than the website. Perhaps that makes a difference. One reason I favour Overdrive is that I do like to move files to more convenient players. That is easy with ODrive, but with Dolphin, it seems to hide the files, limiting me to just the original device. Is that something to do with copyright? Keep up the good work. From Julian.
Well, that's a very interesting question, Julian. The copyright. I mean, my understanding would be that it's for personal use. You've got the book from, say, RNIB or whatever, and you're using it on a different device. It's unfortunate that you have to do it that way. I don't think the FBI are going to come through your front door. I think you're going to be all right. I'm just guessing, but I think we're okay. It's not as if you're selling it on the black market. You know, it's not something I would be too concerned about. But you're right. I mean, there should be better ways to do this. I've got a little story to tell you later, which I'm going to do later rather than just now, about books and access to them. And it actually follows an email from Greg in Pennsylvania last week on the show, which got me to thinking and to trying something. I'll tell you a bit more about it later. Thank you for your email, though, Jules. And
did you see the solo at Site Village at all?
And solo, yeah. No, actually, on that point, that I didn't, actually. I know it was there, but I didn't get a chance to see it at Site Village. However, our friend Roland Myers, who does the Infosound podcast, he has done. I had a conversation with the guy from Kings about it. So check out that podcast, and we'll also feature that, and we have featured that actually on the Daily Connect program as well. So here on RNIB Connect Radio. So lots of opportunities to find out about it. We will talk more about it soon because their range of talking book players are very good. For now, though, let's talk about Android. And it was a surprise to me to find that there are three blind and partially sighted people out there in one room where I happen to be, where there are three Android fans all sitting in front of me. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Hiya.
Now, I very rarely have an opportunity to meet three other blind people who use Android phones. What's going on, Hussein? Why are you using Android phones? Come on,
well,
explain yourself.
Simple, Stephen. It's better than Apple.
Oh,
done.
No, I think in all seriousness, it's just so much more flexible. There is, you know, you want to do something, there's 10 different apps that possibly do it. So there's so much choice and, you know, everything isn't accessible, as we all know. Mm-hmm. But on Android, often you'll find something that does the job. It's relatively easy to use, and not to mention a hell of a lot cheaper than iPhones.
Well, do you know something? That's a big argument these days. And, you know, since the launch of Google's new phone, the Pixel 3a, that's going to be coming in at, what, £400, which is considerably cheaper than what Apple are offering. That is a major factor in it. What drove you, Kim, to getting some Android love rather than an iPhone love?
Two things. One, it was cost, and the other was the software that I use, Synaptics. I love Synaptics. It works very well with me. It works well with the Android. Yes, there are a few hiccups, as there is in everything, but it's great for me.
But for people who don't know what Synaptics is, so it's like an overlay, I would call it an overlay, which is like, it is an app in itself, but it kind of takes over the phone and it gives you a much easier experience. I get in trouble for this a lot, Kim, for saying it's a simple way to use your phone, but it is. It's a simpler way to use it.
Oh, it is. It's a lot simpler. Now, I, you know, like most people, I can't see black writing on white, but I can see yellow on black. So my screens, all the writing is yellow on black. It's very easy. It's got all the apps. And the good thing about Synaptics is when I get into trouble, I just give them a ring and they sort it out for me and talk me through exactly where I'm going wrong and how to use it properly. And I find it very versatile.
And it's not just a specialised device as well. You know, I've got a friend who uses Synaptic as well, Kim, and I've said to her, look, if there ever comes a point where you want to try out the main Android, it's just underneath Synaptic. It's easy to get into. So it's not as if you've got a device that you're going to have to throw away in a couple of years because you want to move on to something else.
And the flip side to all of that, I'm guessing, is, Kim, that you can also use it as an Android phone down the line. So if you decided to use an Android app, you could.
I do. I use both apps. There are some things I can't access and I need the Android for. So I use the Android, and when I need the Synaptics is there. So it's like two for one.
Okay. And you can get that from the RNIB shop if you give them a call on 0303 123 9999 or give the shop or get in touch directly with the shop. You can do that as well. Yeah, you can get it from the RNIB shop, which is great. So well worth checking that out, Synaptic phones. Ross, you're an Android user. What phone are you rocking at the moment?
I currently have, well, what I'd say is the latest and greatest. I've got the Galaxy S10 Plus at the moment.
Nice, okay.
Which took a long time to save up for. I think when it comes to Android phones, let's be honest, the top-end flagships, whether it's an iPhone or an Android phone, they're all pretty great phones and they'll do most things, you know, very smoothly for you. But I think the one thing for me that draws me to Android is that there's simply just more choice. Like, I wouldn't know what the exact statistic of it is, but, you know, a lot of the world's phones are in Android, don't they? And there's just way more choice, I'd say, as well as the fact that they are much, much cheaper.
So it's really interesting when you look at the stats around this. Yes, Android, you're right, are selling out, you know, iPhones left, right and centre. However, in the blind community, when you look at something like a WebAIM survey, these are the annual studies that are done that look at the usage of smartphones and smart devices among blind people, the overriding phone that's still in use by about 75% of those who respond to that survey are iPhones. It's interesting.
It's quite simply that, you know, Apple, you know, let's be fair, Apple did pip Google to the post for accessibility back in the early 2010s or sooner, firstly with the iPod and obviously as the iPhone came along. And that was a game changer for blind and partially sighted people for accessibility. They had something they could use out of the box. They had something that was easy to use, and it was a company that were really keen to take on board accessibility. Well, face it, you know, it drove them to sell more phones. So who wouldn't? And I think also it's just, you know, as often as blind people, we don't like change because it can be quite scary to pick up something new and have to learn it all again and feeling that, you know, we're being left behind because other people have been using it for so long. And I think a lot of people have, you know, grown comfortable with Apple and iPhones. It does what they wanted to do, so they've stuck with it. And if that's what works for them, then so be it.
Yeah, I think a big part of it definitely is about comfort zones. Mm. Once you've gotten yourself familiar with a certain operating system, whether it be on a phone or a laptop or a PC, once you're familiar with the operating system, you know, whether you're blind, partially sighted or not, you really don't like the change, do you? And I guess, as Hussein said, blind and partially sighted people even more so. Once you're used to your accessibility setup, once you've gotten used to pressing those two buttons to activate TalkBack or to turn on high contrast or to do any of these other accessibility features that, you know, you can do on any Android phone with the buttons, once you've gotten used to all that stuff, you don't really want to change, do you?
You know, I'm a tweaker. I love playing with things and breaking things and what have you, putting them back together. But that's just me. And, you know, if it works for me, fair goose. But if something else works for somebody else, then it's whatever works for the individual, really.
How did you all come to this? I mean, was it Android first for you all? Was that your first experience of that touchscreen device?
It was the iPhone for me. And for exactly that reason, at that time, it was the most accessible thing. As I started to learn more about it and became geekier and started having more and more issues with iTunes, not to mention Apple's, and I have to say this, Stephen, sorry about that, but very, very restrictive access to the operating system. Mm. I just felt that wasn't for me. And the Android accessibility at that point had reached the point where the phone was usable as a work phone, which is first and foremost important for me. So I made the switch. The cost benefit wasn't bad either.
Yeah, I think from my point of view, it was Android from the beginning, and it'll probably be Android for a long, long time to come. I think I got my first phone when I was 15, I think, which is 7 years ago. And I go back to what I said earlier. At the time, when it comes to cost and choice, Android was really the only choice for the budget that I and my family had at the time. So it had to be an Android phone. And I guess I've just never looked back from that point onwards. And I guess now I'm that embedded into the Google ecosystem that if I switch to an Apple phone, I think my Google Home's smart speaker would disown me.
What about you, Kim? I mean, you've got Synaptic. How did that come about?
Well, I had a play on the iPhone and I had a play with Synaptic, and Synaptic worked for me so much better. And again, cost was a big thing. But for me, it was more the fact that it was flexible. It met my accessible needs more than the iPhone did. And the fact that I could go from Synaptic to Android was even better.
Yeah, you get. I love that idea, though. I do love that you get that simplicity to learn and that ease of use, but then you also have the ability to then explore further into the operating system if you want to. And I think that's what you're all kind of getting at, is that it's that customization, it's that capability that, that Apple actually doesn't give you. You pretty much get a solid, you know, a fairly solid device, but you are quite restricted in choice. And it's unfortunate that that's where we are. And of course, the other problem is, and this is a larger point that affects everybody who might make the decision to either switch from Android to iPhone or iPhone to Android, but you're kind of locked in with a lot of what they give you as well. I mean, for example, I don't know what I'd do without iMessage and FaceTime, right? I'm like, what would I do in my life without this? And also, you know, I've bought apps on the iPhone. I've bought music through iTunes. I can't take that with me over to Android. So these are all the kind of restrictions that are kind of built in. And actually, that's a bigger problem, isn't it?
I think restrictions is the case whether you're on Apple or Android to a degree. I mean, like you said there, if you buy an app on one store, then if you switch to a different operating system, then bam, that £1, that £2, that 50p, however much it is, that's gone forever, and you're not going to be using that app again. But
and that was a real bugbear for me. And you know, I made a conscious decision when I switched to Apple, and you know, we won't get into the ethics of this, but I made a conscious decision I would not buy any apps, and managed to do everything I wanted to do using free apps. And I remember one night I got so frustrated when I accidentally bought a game or something on the App Store when I was half asleep. But you know, now I've moved over to Google. I think the whole culture has changed as well. That I do buy apps that do what I want to do. And you know, there may well come a time when something else comes along in the future, but I think that's part of, you know, investing in your life. And you know, it's a shame that things can't be transferred, but that's just part of how it is. One thing I do like about Android, though, is I think developers are a lot more flexible. So quite often when you've contacted them to say, look, this button doesn't work, or could you add a few labels here so I can use this with my screen reader, there's a real willingness now on the part of companies to make changes. And I think the Android system of submitting apps makes it a lot easier and makes developers more willing to make those changes and submit them.
So I think, though, I do agree with that, apart from when it comes to tablets, which I'm sure you'd all agree with, that, you know, when it comes to, you know, the different operating systems, when it comes to tablets, Android is generally quite poor. I mean, yeah, when it comes to mobile devices, I'd always pick an Android phone, but if I was to go and get a tablet, I think, you know, in 2019, the iPad is the clear choice because of app optimization and the fact that it's not really there on Android when it comes to tablets.
That's a really interesting point, because one thing I often feel is that as much as I'm an Apple fanboy, and I am self-confessed and I admit that, and, you know, if you're a regular listener to this show, you will know I'm a bit of a fanboy, right? But I also use a Windows PC. Why not a MacBook? You know, I mean, I do use MacBooks now, actually, and I do like them. But, you know, to get stuff done, I get a PC and I use JAWS. And I find that interesting. So, you know, there are tools for the job. Just one point I want to make, though, about apps, and it's just to pick up on Hussein's point there. I think you're right, Hussein. I think that developers, in your case, Android developers, are very responsive. I found the same with Apple iOS developers as well. But I think what we're talking about here is essentially the same thing. People who are small developers who are maybe, you know, one or two guys who are making an app and then putting it up in the store, those people are more likely to respond, I feel, to questions. And I found that with Apple as well. I would say, though, on the point about the cost of apps, I think for blind and partially sighted people, specialist apps, I think KNFB Reader here, you know, that can come in at £100. or Blind Square that was £20 at one point. I think it might have changed a little bit. It changes every so often. Those apps are more expensive for us than perhaps the £1 or £2 apps that I wouldn't necessarily mind buying again for a different device. But I'm not going to spend £100 each time, you know, a new platform shows up.
Stephen, I absolutely agree with your point. And the thing which rubs me even further is just taking KNFB Reader there, Google heavily discounted that in sales and promotions on the App Store, on the Play Store, sorry. But on iOS, that discount has never been applied.
Yep.
And it just seems so unfair that people who've chosen to go with one platform are using it, want to get the best out of it, and just because it happens to be that platform, they're paying 5 or 6 times more. And face it, £100 is a lot of money for anyone at a shout. But when you think about it, you're paying £100 just to be able to read a piece of paper?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Does that really seem fair, guys, no. In 2019?
Not really.
And on that point, from your perspective, Kim, I mean, how useful is that? I mean, you know, all the apps that are out there are obviously great, but Synaptic itself does have a lot of inbuilt features. I've used Synaptic. It's really good, and it's got lots of lovely little features in it that help you do things like that. Read documents, check
read
the weather.
Read documents, yeah. Magnification, colour, it recognises colours. There are so many apps on there that does, and it's inbuilt in Synaptic, so you're not paying extra for it.
Even better, yeah. As a Scottish person, I do like that, the sound of that. Yeah. I don't have to spend any more money. Listen, guys, it's been great talking to you about Android. I think the community of people who use Android, especially blind users like you three, I think it'd be we need to hear more from you. Because I feel that the conversation is often drowned out by Apple fanboys and fangirls, and perhaps that needs to change. Would you agree?
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Well,
I think people just need to know that there are choices out there and the pros and cons of those choices so they can then decide.
Yeah, and I'm sure one day we'll convince you to switch, Stephen.
Highly unlikely, but you never know. You never know. If you can get me my apps moved across, I'll consider it.
Maybe.
Thank you so much for coming on, and I really appreciate all three of you giving us your time today.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
News from the internet.
Yeah, it's time now for the news, and Robin, there's a really interesting story at the moment, which you know all about, because you were all over the news with this one. You were on Sky News talking about it. Lady A has partnered with the NHS. And what we are finding is that lots of information is now available to those who have Amazon Echo devices. You can ask a question and you'll get health advice from the NHS, which is really good. It comes from the website information. Let's get more on this now from our reporter, Will Rowe.
According to the NHS website,
the smart device will search the health service website to get replies.
Getting plenty of rest if you have a cold or the flu.
It's been welcomed by the health secretary, who insists people's data will remain secure.
There are privacy rules in place, that's important.
But the Royal College of GPs says more research is needed and Alexa shouldn't replace doctors.
If in doubt, still consult a healthcare professional.
Amazon insists it takes customer privacy seriously.
See a GP if your head that keeps coming back.
And that's the thing, isn't it? So that was Will Rowe there, of course, explaining the story. But that's the thing. Privacy, security, that is the big question that's coming out of this, Robin. Where do you stand on this story?
Yeah, well, even in the story that I did with Sky News, there was this concern voiced that you would be handing over all of your private medical information to the Echo, and that's or to Amazon. And that's not true. That's simply not true. You're just asking questions about, you know, how do I stop a nosebleed? What are the symptoms of a heart attack, whatever it might be, but it might be for yourself, it could be for your neighbor, or it could just be idle curiosity. So it's not useful information that they're going to be kind of hoarding and using against you if the next time you want to get life insurance or something. So these are just ad hoc, you know, queries, and you get back really useful information. And every time they pull it from the NHS website, they start off by saying, you know, I found this on the NHS website. So you can be confident that it's accurate and comprehensive. They don't pull everyone from there. Sometimes it depends on how you phrased a particular request. It might also come from other sources, but they will be quoted instead. So you always know where it's coming from. The NHS website is a brilliant resource. And it's also what you'd get if you call 111 and you talk to someone over the phone. They're just accessing that same database as well. So, yeah, brilliant step forward, I think, for the A-Lady. AbilityNet has been involved. We've worked with the NHS over many years to make sure that their information to customers is accessible. And I think this is a brilliant advance where you can just, you know, ask a question to the air and get back reliable, useful information.
And of course, this can have a big impact for us blind people, for elderly people, for anyone, frankly, who doesn't really want to use a computer to search for this. Maybe they can't. Maybe don't really like computers, don't really enjoy using them. You know, that's the point. This is for everybody. It's not specifically for elderly people or blind people. But there is no doubt that we will benefit from this information, won't we?
Yeah, and I, for one, am not that concerned about linking my Amazon Echo with various other things. And there are lots of skills and capabilities that are augmented by having, you know, linking to a third-party account, ordering food, for example.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea what you mean, but yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, reorder my pizza. But if that meant linking to my local GP's surgery records so that I could book an appointment, I could have an online chat with someone through the Echo, I could access some of my GP's services efficiently and without needing to look up telephone numbers or go to the surgery, I'm all for that. Obviously, security is always going to be of prime concern. But anyone who's got a smartphone, you know, that boat has sailed pretty much. We're already open to hackers accessing that information, etc. So, you know, you're either all in or you are, you know, trying your best not to live in the digital world, I think.
Okay, well, it's an interesting story nonetheless. I think I'd be interested to hear what our listeners think about this. You can email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. If you've got one of these Amazon Echo devices, are you using it? If you don't have an Amazon Echo device, would this make you want one? Because I think that's often the thing, Robin. A lot of people might wonder, why do I want this in my house? And there are things like this that come along. You know, there are lots of skills. And like you say, I mean, you've done a podcast on it, 900 odd episodes. You know, the fact is that there are so many things you can do with this device. But there are certain skills that come along that do, you know, really provoke a national conversation. This being one of them.
Absolutely.
Another story which I popped up in my inbox this week. I think it's actually a really lovely story in a lot of ways. Be My Eyes, the app that we talk about a lot on the show. It has two features to it. It's got volunteer support, where you can contact a volunteer and they can help be your eyes, essentially, by using the rear camera in your smartphone. That's available on iOS and Android. It's a free app. It's free to use. But there's also specialized help. Again, free to access. But what's brilliant about specialized help is it is actual companies that are offering their customer support through Be My Eyes. So you've got Google, you've got Microsoft, and there's now banking on there as well. If you're having an issue, you can't read something, maybe you're trying to get information about some statement or whatever you've got, you can contact the bank directly. They can see what you're trying to show them, which is brilliant. But a new one's just been added, and it's a partnership with a company called ClearBlue, and they make pregnancy test kits. Now, I know because I've been here long enough and, you know, I mean, I don't have children, but I know many blind mums we've spoken to over the years who really wanted to be able to know if they were pregnant by themselves. They didn't want to bring in somebody else to find out the answer to that question. They wanted to know on their own. Very personal thing, obviously. And I know it's a couple's thing, but what if your husband's blind, right? That means you have to go somewhere else. So, you know, it's a challenge. So this is something which has thankfully been dealt with, and ClearBlue are now providing support. I mean, this is a really good news story in so many ways, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you're using your phone's camera to connect with a ClearBlue employee who will then read out the results from the stick, or, you know, that you've just done your sample on, and hopefully it's good news or it's the news that you wanted. And that's better than a random volunteer that you would get with the normal Be My Eyes service, because, you know, it's a private thing. So to use a ClearBlue employee rather than a random volunteer, I think it's a nice addition.
Although let's not discount the random volunteers. I heard a wonderful, I know you're not, but, you know, I mean, I saw a wonderful tweet the other day from a woman who had helped a blind guy read a card from his daughter, and he was in tears, she was in tears, everyone was in tears. You know, it's such an emotional thing because, again, that's so personal. And yeah. Being able to get help from someone who's not family, who you don't feel someone is being a burden, is brilliant. So no, it's just such a wonderful service, and I'm glad to see it grow. We don't have time to talk about it this week, but I want to talk maybe next week about Ira on the show, Robin, because Ira doesn't seem to be making an appearance here at all. I don't know why that is. Have you heard anything? I mean, what was going on with that?
They're going through changes. So let's talk about it next week.
Yeah, let's do that on the show next week because we don't have a huge amount of time to talk this week. There is one story, though, you wanted to bring up. And this is interesting. I must admit, when I hear these stories about amazing scientific discovery that could make people sighted who are blind, I'm always a bit kind of like, yeah, but that'll be when I'm dead. And it probably will be, in fairness. But I think there's still really interesting research going on. That's what you've picked up this week.
Yes, so an article came out this week in The Guardian about a team of US scientists that have created an implant, a chip that is implanted into your brain that can restore some vision. So the electrodes connect directly into the vision center of the brain. So this bypasses the optic nerve and the eye. So anyone that hasn't got a functioning eye or optic nerve now is in with a chance for having some vision restored. I, for one, have scar tissue instead of a retina at the back of my eye. So the implants that we've heard about up till now, which are embedded in the retina, need to have a better functioning retina than my bunch of scar tissue. So I'm not in the market for one of those. So I'm personally quite excited about this. It hasn't been tested on people that have been blind from birth. So that's a caveat there. But for the people that have had some vision at one point, they've implanted this chip, they send signals directly to it, and then they show somebody, and you wear glasses with a camera on, and then they show them a screen, a black screen with a white square on it, and they ask the people to point to the white square, and they were able to do that wherever that square popped up on the screen. So it's quite low res, early days, definitely, but it's an improvement. It's a step forward for those people for whom other options aren't available. So, yeah, watch that space.
Fascinating. Really fascinating. I can see why you're excited by that, for sure. Okay, well, look, that's the news this week. There's lots more, I'm sure, but those are the main stories we've picked up this week. I want to move on, though, because we're going to find out now about the work of a visually impaired film director. And this is always interesting to me, how people do these jobs. I don't mean this from the sighted, this is interesting. I mean from the, actually, how do you do this? I mean, actually, how does that work? Well, Adil Latif from AbilityNet has been talking to Adam Morris about his new movie, which is out, called Lucid, and also telling us a bit about the technology that he uses to do his job.
It's a psychological film about lucid dreaming and how a young man uses the practice to overcome his social anxiety, or attempts to. Wow. He practices the art of seduction in his dreams so that he can become confident in waking life and endeavour to win the girl of his dreams.
And so the kind of elephant in the room here is, you're actually registered as blind?
Everyone knows, not everyone, but it's out there. You know, people.
You've come out.
I've come out of the blind closet.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you are, and because that fascinates me. You know, in the world of blindness, you need role models. You know, you need to know that someone blind's done that for you to be able to think, I must be able to do that if I want to because I'm blind. But did you have any blind film director role models at all? Or
I don't know of any blind film directors, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to be open about my journey and making this movie and what it's been like for me, because if there are other, I'm sure there are many filmmakers who are visually impaired like myself.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to give permission for them to, open up about who they are.
Yeah.
And just own it and let the industry know that, we're differently abled, but it's actually quite an advantage for us in many ways to have our other senses heightened, yeah, and hone in on mental capacities and talents that you wouldn't be able to unlock otherwise.
So what advantages do you say that you had as a VI director?
I've always had a very vivid imagination. My imagination's always been wild, it always runs away with me, and I've always you know, had images running through my head on a daily basis. I have ideas, I see pictures, I hear sounds, and since losing my sight, that's only increased.
Right.
And also, more than anything, my emotional sensitivity now is so high. I mean, I've always been a sensitive guy, but since I lost my sight, I can't judge people on face value of how they look. I can only go off how they make me feel.
Yeah.
And because I'm in tune with vibrations now, more than I ever have been, it gives me the chance to share the energy with people and be on that frequency. So when I'm directing actors, I feel so connected to them.
That's amazing. And just on a practical note, I should point out, I am drop-dead gorgeous, if you can't see that.
I'm close enough to get to appreciate.
But, I'm lying.
Yeah, with what I can see, I've got... Yeah. No, it's your energy, man. You've got beautiful energy.
Thank you. So, just in a practical note, because obviously technology has really helped, you know, people with...
Absolutely.
With impairments. So is there any sort of kit or techniques that you've used?
Absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't be here if it was not for technology and living in this digital age where I have these devices that enable me as an artist. For example, right now I'm in prep for my next movie, and Give Vision have kindly provided me with the Sight Plus device that allows me to see at a distance for the first time in 10 years.
So Give Vision is an innovative company that's got this special smart glasses, right?
Essentially you put on this headset like it's VR,
right?
And you can zoom in around and bring the what's around, you know, something that's, you know, straight to you.
Wow.
And, you know, so now that I'm scouting locations, you know, I walk into this exterior kind of foyer with my designer looking around. She's like, what do you think? I put on my Sight Plus. I can appreciate the aesthetic that surrounds me, you know, the texture of the buildings, because I can zoom right in on them, you know, and it's fantastic. That's to be able to have that, you know. And, you know, Jaws is obviously how now allows me to write my screenplays. The smartphones now, you can, you know, access any information at any time, which is great for anyone, but... For me, it, you know, Siri, you know, is one of my best friends.
Yes.
You know, I can dictate who I want to call, what I want to text. Yeah. I don't need to use my eyes. I just need to use my voice and my ears. And I've proven that I can make a film despite being registered blind. And I want everyone out there, I don't care if you've got, you know, a condition or if you're differently abled, who you are, where you're from, we're all capable of doing great things.
That's amazing.
Everyone is capable of greatness.
Thank you. That's so... And lastly, where can people see Lucid if they want to watch it?
So it's coming out later in the year. Please stay posted for the release date. It's been an amazing experience. I just want to say thank you guys.
It's been
lovely talking to you.
Such a buzz.
That's Addy there talking to Adam Morris about the movie Lucid. And Sight Plus that Adam was talking about can be purchased from givevision.net. It's £3,000, cheaper half the price. £2,995, actually, if you're counting. Right, let's talk about Sight Village. It happened in Birmingham. And we are very excited, of course, because Sight Village continues around the country. Find out more by searching online for QAC Sight Village. That's the Queen Alexandra College. Joining me now on the line to talk about her experiences there is Sheila Armstrong from Torch Trust. Good to have you here, Sheila.
Hello, Stephen.
Hi. Now, let's talk about your experience at Sight Village. I was there as well in Birmingham. It was a pretty lively event. I only got to go for one day. I wish I'd stayed for two. But it was a brilliant event, and there was so much to see and do. What were your highlights?
Well, I only got there for half a day, so that made it even
more difficult. You're even less than me.
But we did get fairly well round. And one of the highlights, I mean, I suppose it kind of happened last year, but I think it was kind of what you might call solidified this year, was the presence of the lower cost braille displays. Now, I'm totally blind and I use a braille display on my computer all the time. But we had the Canute, which I know that you were working with.
Yep.
And we also had the Orbit Reader, which finally made an appearance. Was it last year? Hasn't been out. Yeah, about last year. Hasn't been out all that long. We waited for ages and ages and thought it would never come. And then there was also the Braille Me, another low-cost braille display. And when I'm saying low-cost, sort of £400 or £500, but when you knock that against £3,000 or £4,000, you can see that they are low-cost in the scheme of things. So it was great to see that, and it was great to imagine that hopefully it will help people to think that learning braille is a good idea.
And it gives people access to it, where, you know, like you say, I mean, it's still a considered purchase, but it's a far less considered purchase than £3,000 or £4,000, which, you know, you can get a decent car for.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't really have that kind of money, it might be more doable for a grant-making body or a little fundraiser. You know, it doesn't feel a lot to raise sort of £400 or £500 for something, whereas if you had to raise £3,000 or £4,000 on a fundraiser, you know, it would involve a lot more work. Mm. So I think it should make them more easily available to people, even if their income is fairly low.
Did you have any preference over BrailleMe or Orbit? I mean, they're both about the same price.
Yes. I think maybe the Orbit could be a bit maybe more developed. The BrailleMe has got more features because you can route the cursor, which means if you want to get to a place and it's not where the cursor is, you want to make a correction and it's at the end of the line and your cursor's at the beginning, you press a little key above the one that you want to correct and the cursor will leap towards it immediately. So cursor routing is a good feature for people who use Braille quite fast, and it has that. But they have some features are on the Orbit and some features are on the BrailleMe, so it would depend on what features were more important to someone. And maybe the Orbit's a bit more robust, a bit sturdier. So if it was a child, you might want to look at the Orbit.
That's a good point.
Around a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very well built, that's for sure. So low-cost Braille displays, good. Yeah. And that's a good one. What else did you spot when you were there?
Well, I noticed that Lucy Edwards, the makeup blogger, was going to be new at Sight Village. We went up to her stand, but I'm afraid she wasn't there. So maybe she was consulting with somebody in a more private space. But I missed her, unfortunately. I was looking forward to having a little chat with her, so that would be good. And there were quite a lot of holiday things. There was SeaAble, which provides escorts to certain places where they've got people living locally that are willing to just guide people around their holiday and just take them wherever they want to go, drive them from the airport, take them to restaurants. I was even tempted by the idea of sitting in a vineyard all day in Sicily. Sound like a good plan to me. Not very technical, maybe, but a good plan.
I think I could quite happily sit there with a Victor Reader stream in a vineyard. Yeah, I could do tech job from there. I'd be quite happy with that.
And yeah, we saw there were some more little. There was a couple of little Daisy players on our Steve Nutt's computer room services. He'd got a small one without Wi-Fi, that just would play Daisy books, easier to work and more straightforward, but a slightly bigger one, but not any bigger than a Victor Stream, that had Wi-Fi and had very similar attributes to the Victor Stream with Wi-Fi, the dearer one, but about half the price. And Stephen always finds a feature that the other thing that he might be up against hasn't got, and this one was that it can read PDFs.
Ah.
Well, we get a lot of PDFs, so that is a handy thing. And it did look easy to work and good. Yeah, I thought it was a nice little piece of kit.
Steve's great, his name is Steve Nutt, is the guy who runs Computer Room Services. He's brilliant. And because he's blind himself, he has a vested interest in this for himself, but also for his customers. And it's great to just get a chance to, you know, even just to talk to Steve. I mean, one thing I like is I'll give him a call sometimes and he'll tell me something. And maybe he doesn't stock it, but he'll tell you where to get whatever it is. And, you know, he's got that. He's a mine of information when it comes to that.
Absolutely. And that's what's great. To catch up on Steve. Sorry.
That's what's great with Sight Village, isn't it? That it's got people there who, yeah, I mean, there are companies there that are going to sell products. You've got Optolite, you've got Humanware, Sight and Sound. They're all there selling their products, showing off technology. But it's also a great opportunity to network with people and just, you know, a bit like this show in some ways. Just people come together, ask questions of each other. That's what it's all about, really, isn't it?
Yeah. And the nice thing was that when Sight Village finished, I was able to go on to a hotel in Solihull and network with people from Tavit, which used to be BCAB, and it was the celebrating the Jubilee, 50 years of the organisation. Well, obviously, I wasn't there when it started. But
none of us were there when it started. And,
there was one person who had not been to the first meeting, but every subsequent one. And yeah, some of them went back quite far. I don't know if there was anybody who was actually a founder member, but it was good to relax like that after the busyness of Site Village. So that was nice too.
Well, I have fond memories.
The technical stuff was coming out.
Mm-hmm. I have fond memories of BCAB as it was under there, because that's the first time I met you. I met you and I interviewed you at an event.
Did you?
Yes, it was a Techer Break weekend for BCAB.
About that.
Yeah, I can't think how many years ago it was, but it wasn't yesterday. But yeah, that's how we met. And, you know, these events are brilliant for this, and that's exactly what it's all about. Sheila, it's been great having you on, talking about Site Village, and, you know, looking forward to the next one. And it's one of those things we say we'll meet, but it's very difficult to do that sometimes in these events, especially when you tell your assistant who's with you, you know, just look out for the blind lady. Kind
yeah,
of awkward.
Quite a few of them.
Yeah. Sheila, thanks a lot for coming on.
Okay, thanks.
Robin, really interesting to hear from Sheila there, talking about her experience of Site Village.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really good to get the first-hand experiences of people who have used various gadgets. So the BrailleMe, you know, she really values the cursor routing, and that's good input. And the Orbit being more sturdy, perhaps for younger users, where it might get a bit of a bashing. So, yeah. You know, you don't hear that in the tech specs from the manufacturers themselves, so that's really good. And C-Able, I've never heard of that one, where volunteers can drive you around. I'm definitely going to look into that one. I perhaps provide a summary next week of what that's all about and some contact details. But yeah, that sounds really, really good. And I'm also interested in the Daisy Reader that Steve Nutt provides there, which is half the price, and it seems to be comparable to the Victor Reader Stream. So maybe we're going to have some more reading Daisy Reader info next week too.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, because I want to tell you a story, and I'll just tell you very briefly, because we've only got less than a minute left. I just want to very quickly tell you about one of my purchases at Site Village Birmingham, which was a Victor Reader Stream. This might surprise people, but so many people have talked about it. So many people have shared the love about the Victor Reader Stream. Andy, there are still emails, I believe.
Oh, tons. Yeah, so much love
haven't
for the
got
Victor
to
Reader.
Yet. Yeah. So much love for the Victor Reader. So we're going to be talking more about that next week on the show. I will tell you my thoughts on it. I have to say, not just my thoughts on the device, but also the services that go along with the device. Very, very interesting. If you want to keep in touch with the show, please do. Sorry it's been such a quick one this week. It feels like we've flown through. But guys, we'll catch you again next time. Robin, Andy, thank you.
Chat to you next week.
Thanks, guys.